Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. By any chance, are you familiar with the Story Exchange? If yes, great. If no, even better. The Story Exchange is a nonprofit media project dedicated to sharing the stories of women entrepreneurs from all over the world. In partnership with Boston's Babson College, it completed an unprecedented 3-year study of 1,000 women in business. The project contains the largest qualitative data about female entrepreneurs to date. The information provides an intimate look at the dramatic stories of the women behind the stats and at the same time challenges the accepted norms about why women start their own businesses, the obstacles they face, their definitions of success, and approach to money. We'll discuss those findings in detail in just a moment. The director of digital media at the Story Exchange is my guest today. Reva Richmond is a journalist who specializes in technology, global, and small business. She was a senior editor at the Economist Intelligence Unit and has also written for The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, Dow Jones Newswires, and Entrepreneur.com. Reva has traveled extensively, Europe, the Middle East, India, Central America. And oh, one more thing, she was a dancer. And one more thing still, a martial artist. Let's meet this multidimensional Jill of all trades. Reva, welcome and thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
So what is the genesis of the Story Exchange? When was it started? Why and by whom?
Right. Well, it was started 3 years ago by the co-founders of the Story Exchange, Sue Williams and Victoria Wong, who had begun the Story Exchange primarily as a video project. Sue is a documentary filmmaker, and they wanted to elevate the stories of women entrepreneurs who they felt were not being represented in the media enough. That it was men, it was high growth startups that were getting all the ink. And what about women entrepreneurs? And they wanted to reveal that this is a career opportunity for women, that this is an option for women to contribute to their families, to their society. And so they started this project with this notion that women needed more role models. They needed to see other women who were doing the same thing.
Now, did they think there were a lot of women entrepreneurs in 2011?
Well, yes, they knew because they had been working with Babson and been aware of Babson research that showed that there are quite a lot of women entrepreneurs in the United States. Babson does a comprehensive global study as well. And so around the world, there's hundreds of millions of women
sure.
who own businesses. But they do tend to be smaller businesses. They tend to be they tend to have shorter longevity than men's businesses.
So that must not be a good thing, though, if their longevity is shorter.
Right. There is a need to support women in business. They don't necessarily get the same opportunities and encouragement as mm-hmm. men always around the world.
Oh, gee, always?
Even in the United States, where things are a bit better, but when you talk on a global level, there's some serious challenges in a lot of places for women to pursue their own companies, employ people, all that.
So would this also be not only collecting information, but also providing mentorship?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a mentorship at a distance, I guess, in that we're providing videos and articles about women in business that other women could use as inspiration.
Sure.
We haven't to date connected people physically, but that could be something that we could do in the future. But right now we're doing articles, videos, and we have a new podcast as well. So we're trying to just tell the stories of women entrepreneurs. As you noted, we are a nonprofit. We're not selling anything. We have no agenda except to reveal the sort of multiplicity and richness of the female experience in entrepreneurship, and it is very rich.
So what have you found?
Right. So our study, its genesis was in conversation with Babson, who, as I mentioned, does this very comprehensive, hardcore data type of study.
That is a business school.
Yes, that is a business school, and they have a sort of renowned entrepreneurship program. They're one of the places in the country for entrepreneurship education.
For both sexes.
Yes, mm-hmm. for both sexes. They also have a center on women's entrepreneurial leadership, and so we have worked very much with them. And the idea was that what we could contribute, what we could add to what they had done is the rich stories. They have this representative data of entrepreneurship globally, but
it's mostly more facts than kind of flavor in a way.
Right, that we could show that richness of experience by collecting a lot of women's stories. So we used a survey, but our survey was primarily open answer essay style questions, which is challenging to analyze.
Oh,
for
you think?
Us. But it was really exciting. It's really wonderful reading a lot of these stories.
Before we get into those stories, who is the us? How many us are there in the story exchange? And how did you get involved?
Right. Well, so we have our two co-founders.
Right.
I run the website. And I'm essentially the editor of the written content. And I have one other writer.
Mm-hmm.
We have a contributor who's the host of our podcast. We have also technical help, obviously, for our website, for our podcast, for video editing, but we bring in on an as-needed basis, essentially.
So you joined in 2011?
No, I just joined in April.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. So you are brand new to work on this particular project, correct?
Right, right. But I brought some particular skills to this coming from the Economist Intelligence Unit, where mm-hmm. we worked with survey data.
Right.
We ran our own surveys. I was part of writing surveys. So that was, I think, one of the reasons why I was brought in, because I would be able to help bring 1,000 stories to fruition, really help with the analysis, and also turning that into and analytical stories that we could communicate with everyone in the, you know, we could communicate with the world about what we'd found.
So when you joined the Story Exchange, the 1,000 stories had been collected at that point?
No, we were at about 900.
Okay. So and then it was your job to basically, and I'm going to use this word, not negatively, but slog through all this information.
Well, actually, I have to give a lot of that credit to Victoria Wong. She is a former banker and mm-hmm. an investor, and she is one of the founding forces behind the Story Exchange. So she actually went through all of these stories and coded them.
Mm-hmm.
We had a question about why women start businesses. Why did you start? And so she kind of found categories and she tagged everything so that we could basically turn it into numerical values and we could analyze it.
Was there a particular part of the world where you got more responses than others? And did anything jump out at you right away and surprise you in terms of the data?
About 3/4 is from the U.S.,
okay,
which is probably not surprising since we're based here and it's an English language site. We have a big Canadian group, a U.K. group as well. We have a very large group from India, about 19% from India.
Mm-hmm.
And we have quite a few from Pakistan and all over the world, continental Europe and so on. But I think because of we are English language, it did restrict us a little bit, but we do have stories from 50 countries.
So what is the tie that binds, if you can make sweeping generalizations before we get very specific about what connects all these women?
I think the most interesting thing is that although, of course, they want to build strong businesses that provide a living, they are more motivated by meaning than money.
Uh-huh.
I mean, maybe this isn't a surprise, but there was no apology for this, right? It was important. Even those women who told us that they started companies out of economic necessity, still, you know, they'd lost a job. We have people who wanted to find meaning even when they had severe economic challenges. So it was pretty much, it was a thread that really ran throughout that these women wanted to do good.
So it's more than just, you know, creating a product like Spanx and then watching it fly and you're making gazillions of dollars. That was not necessarily the overriding theme that you came across.
Right, there was much more altruism. Not that she's not being altruistic, the woman who founded Spanx. That's not what I mean.
Right. Well, it was often a very, like, a complex set of motives. Like, you can't just say one thing. Certainly, many wanted to be very successful in monetary terms in their ventures. But what when you ask them, how do they define success or what is their greatest success? It was that they had made a difference in other people's lives. It is, you know,
that's what drove them.
Yes. So, for example, Elaine Weary, she founded a technology company called Meebo, and she was the epitome of a modern success. She sold her company to Google. But when we asked her about how does she define success, it was about having an impact on the world, and it was about her team that she had built. So, you know, what we believe is happening is women are embracing a very different definition of success, a broader definition of success than is the one you hear about in the media that is very focused on the stock market and profits and revenue growth and those very, certainly very measurable and important success measures. But women are expanding that definition significantly to the meaning. They're expanding it significantly to the social impacts that they can have on the community. They are defining success more broadly. And as women become a bigger part of the business world, and right now women own about 30% of the businesses in the United States, but they are growing at a much faster rate than men's businesses. And as they do, and they have, I think that they will be bringing this broader, bigger, richer, a more human definition of success to the business world as a whole. And we are already seeing this embrace of social entrepreneurship.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Reva Richman, who is the director of digital media at the Story Exchange. So you go through these 1,000 responses, and what happens with all this data?
Right. Well, we're actually debating that right now, whether to continue this project.
Meaning, what do you mean by continue?
You know, the next 1,000.
Uh-huh.
Because it really has been wonderful for our site. We've published now almost all of the 1,000 stories. Each woman gets their own page that has some of their important answers.
So I would have my own page, in other words.
Right. And it just says, you know, it's in their words. It's not a reported story, but we provide in their own words why they started, how they define success, what was their challenge, top challenge in their business. And we give them a voice. And it's been a really wonderful asset for our site. And I think there's a lot more we can do with it. We have now created an interactive map. So you can actually travel around the world and click to read individual stories.
There will be other surveys. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, I think we have learned a lot in this process. It was the first big data project that we had, the Story Exchange had done. So I think we're going to spend a little time looking at what worked and what we could do better and probably tweak things a little bit and maybe have, you know, 1,000 stories part two.
Well, I'm sure that there are just so many more stories that you can cull. What happened to some of the women who had these wonderful dreams and not pie-in-the-sky things where it didn't work?
Of course, since it was a 3-year project, we had some people who were not in business by the time we published this.
Yes.
November. So we did take a look at who was not in business and to see what we could learn about that. And you know, failure is a part of, it's a part of life.
Of course.
Certainly a big part of small businesses' life. And about half of businesses don't make it more than 5 years. And that's just any kind of business. Ours, we're on that measure very successful. I think we had about a 10% rate that didn't make it. And a lot of them, for whatever reason, decided just to do something else or to go back being an employee. You know, entrepreneurship is not for everyone, but most of the women that we spoke to felt that it had been a great growing experience for them. And so failure was feedback, you know?
Sure. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between being a business person and an entrepreneur?
Generally, an entrepreneur is someone who's is an ideas person who's interested really in starting a business. And most entrepreneurs that we follow, they tend to be the newer companies that are starting up who are, they've developed their business idea and now they're trying to bring it to life.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of business owners don't look at themselves as entrepreneurs.
That sounds very lofty, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'm an entrepreneur.
And I think sometimes it seems a little bit intimidating.
Yes, exactly.
But there are so many women running businesses and have been running it for 20 years. Do they consider themselves an entrepreneur? Many might not.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see why they shouldn't, but it's for some people, being a business owner is a more attainable idea.
So let's get personal here. Mm-hmm. I would have to imagine that you were a bit of an anomaly working in the technology field and in the business field as a writer. Were you not when you started out?
I really had my start as a journalist at Dow Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of other women reporters.
Really?
And it was not... I never really felt...
That it was a boys' club?
No, I didn't really. Even in our sort of leadership, there were women. So that was never really...
How long ago was that?
This was about 2000 is when I started there.
Mm-hmm.
And I covered technology companies for about 9 years. And I had the internet beat. I covered Google when it went public for its first 2 years as a public company. I never had any issues. I would have to say I didn't face a whole lot of challenges being female, I didn't think. Prior to that, I lived in Cairo, Egypt, and I got my initial journalism experience there.
Why? Why were you in Cairo?
I was just very interested in that part of the world. I had spent my junior year abroad there in college.
And so when you graduated, you kind of gravitated?
Yeah, I kind of chose that over journalism school. I figured why not have an adventure and not come out with debt afterwards.
So when you went to Egypt, was your goal to work there or just live an experience there?
No, I wanted to get a start in journalism. And
now you must have been an anomaly there. No?
There were a lot of other youngsters like me who were trying to be journalists, so that I had compatriots for sure.
But did you have a connection? I mean, did you not think what you did to be kind of ballsy? I think I'm just going to go to Egypt. I'm going to go to Cairo and be a journalist and work for whom?
Yeah, well, it was maybe a little bit.
Come on, Reva, it is a bit of a big deal.
Yeah, I had worked at the Council on Foreign Relations for 3 years out of college for professors of Middle East politics.
Where did you go to school?
I went to Barnard.
Okay.
I was very much immersed in Middle Eastern politics, and that was what I was interested in, and I was actually interested in being a politics reporter. But I ended up being a business reporter because that was the job opening that I got,
mm-hmm.
You know?
Who hired you?
I worked for a little publication called the Cairo Times. That was a fortnightly news magazine owned by an Egyptian man who had he had worked as a fixer for the LA Times and other places, and he had been a human rights activist. So that was a great education, and I worked with a great bunch of people, and I learned a tremendous amount. But then, you know, it was eventually time for me to come home, mostly because of things going on in my family.
Mm-hmm.
But I came back and I went to Dow Jones, and it was a good foundation. I mean, I didn't have to spend money on journalism school, and I didn't have to do free.
You had street cred.
And I didn't have to do free internships either.
Yeah,
And I was at a point, I was already out of college. Those weren't really options for me, I didn't feel so.
So you were content at Dow Jones. It was working for you, right?
I learned really a lot there. It's a fast-paced news environment, and it's the... its sister publication is the Wall Street Journal. So I had the chance to work with a lot of Wall Street Journal editors. I was published extensively in the journal. So mm-hmm. that was all great mm-hmm. education.
And that was all basically business/technology?
Yes, it was business reporting, but I had created a specialty in technology. But I also built a secondary expertise in small business. I wrote once every 3 months. I was a columnist in the Wall Street Journal's enterprise column about small business. You know, I would look for a story that really had a bigger picture impact. So some kind of larger lesson for small businesses in general. You know, when you're not writing about celebrities, you really need to bring a value to the reader that it applies to them. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the stories I pursued were technology stories. And back then, you know, the internet was a far newer thing.
Sure.
So, you know, what do you do about bad Yelp reviews? What do you, you know, what about what about security, you know, computer security challenges?
So I did you sort of have carte blanche with that? Did you come up with the story ideas or you were assigned?
I pitched my editor.
And so how did you make the move from there to some of these other publications?
After I left Dow Jones, I freelanced. And that was just a decision that I wanted to try something new. Mm-hmm. I had been there a long time. And so I began, I continued to write for the Wall Street Journal, and then I also picked up the New York Times, so that was sort of interesting, writing for total competitors. But yeah, those were my main clients.
Were you sent out on assignments? Because I mentioned in my introduction, you've been to a lot of places around the world. Were you there for business or pleasure?
You know, most of my work has been in the U.S. I did do a piece from India for this Enterprise column, but it's more that I personally have a travel bug.
So that you would work and then stop working.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I would find a story where I was. Certainly when I was freelancing, mm-hmm. I did more abroad. I reported a story about this group of Russian hackers. And I didn't go to Russia, but I went to interview some of the researchers who were tracking them in Germany and in Bulgaria, that kind of thing.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Reva Richman, who is the director of digital media at the Story Exchange. So you have this kind of eclectic career, in a sense, in a good mm-hmm. way, and then you find your way to the Story Exchange. And there's this massive survey, but what else does the Story Exchange do?
We are a media project, and, you know, there's massive changes obviously happening in media today.
Let's
because
talk
of
about
the internet.
Them.
Yeah. And so I think that projects like the Story Exchange are going to become increasingly important sources of independent journalism. Mm-hmm. We all know about the woes of local papers and the economic pressures to do sensationalistic kind of coverage. And so going to the Story Exchange was a great opportunity for me, I felt, to help build something like that, where the value was on great information and good storytelling and not on advertising and clicks. And mm-hmm. of course, we want an audience, and we're doing a lot of things to try to build our audience, but we don't have to sort of, like, you know, pander or anything like that. I saw that as a really interesting opportunity.
Your title is being the director of digital media. Does the Story Exchange extend beyond the internet?
No, that's what the digital part means. So, but we, you know, we're on social media, we're on the web, we have a podcast, we have video. So we're in a multimedia.
Uh-huh. What would you like to see happen?
We're just not in print. I think that's why we call it digital. We don't have any print product.
So what would you like, if I said to you, so what do you have up your sleeve? Do you have anything that you could share? Do you have any fantasies about this job and what you can do?
Well, you know, we're starting to think about the election cycle coming up, where we have, we're very likely to have a female candidate mm-hmm. on the Democratic side. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I suppose possibly on the Republican side. And there's a lot of other women running for office. There's a lot of bread and butter middle class issues that are important to women. So I think we're starting to think about what kind of, do we want to look at some of the issues that are going to be big, important issues during the election, like the wage gap.
The wage gap.
You know, and income inequality, or you could just say income stagnation of the middle class, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. and looking at entrepreneurship as a solution to some of these, as an empowering solution for women to, I mean, if a woman owns her own company, are the men going to be paid more than her? Probably
wow.
not.
Yeah.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So I think we might like to start taking a look at some of these kind of issues. Also, we want to make sure that we're talking to men, too. I think we've generally considered our audience to be female. But when we look at our social media following, we have a lot of men. And I think we need to bring men in the conversation, too. So we may start looking at more at the partnerships between men and women in business.
What interests me also, though, is not every woman is capable or has the desire to start her own business, obviously. But is the focus as well on how to make it easy or more viable for them to move along in a company? I mean, why are we still singing that song?
Well, you know, we haven't to date really focused on the broader topic of women in the workplace. There are some other places doing that and, you know, they're allies and we're interested in that. But so far, we've decided to keep a fairly narrow focus. Just we're a small organization and we want to make sure we're doing that well. But in the future, it could be something we explore. We have looked at a few areas like that where we've looked at women in technology. We've looked at women in Hollywood. I'm interested in looking at women in the sports business. So in some of the places where it's a male-dominated industries.
What do you mean women in the sports business? In what capacity? Because, you know, we certainly see them providing color, you know, down on the field during halftime at a football game or whatever. But are you talking in the management department or coaching?
Oh, yes. All those things. I mean, there's now a women's hockey league. It's the first professional hockey league that's paying women players. And it was started by a woman who's about 28, I believe.
Wow.
So, you know, we definitely have women breaking into sport. We've seen coaches in the NFL, this first female coach. You mentioned that I
was a martial artist.
Yeah, well, actually, what I currently am is a surfer. That's my current passion for the last 4 years. And that is a very sexist industry. Hmm. And but there's some fantastic women surfers. And it's they really have they're breaking through now. And many of them want to be in the surf industry, in addition, especially women who have been, say, pro competitors and then what is there for them in the industry.
Why is that? I mean, why aren't there more women surfers? Or if there are women surfers, why are they pushed to the side?
I don't know. That's a good question. It's something I think we should explore. I mean, it's certainly most, probably the vast majority of surfers are men.
Right.
But that is definitely changing.
I never even thought about that mm-hmm. wow, how many female surfers do you know?
The purses that they compete for are way smaller than men. The field is smaller. The number of competitions is smaller.
Yeah, sports is really a huge area. How many female jockeys are there? The list kind of goes on and on. Do you profile some of those?
Haven't really done that yet. But that's something I think would be really interesting.
Because you basically have your work cut out for you, don't you, in the story exchange?
You know, I have no shortage of ideas of things that we could do. So it's coming down
share
to
share some more of them.
No. I think we should keep a few under our hats.
So you see yourself and the story exchange kind of going off into the distance together, into the future together,
oh,
right?
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, I think there's so many interesting things that we could do. And, but as a small nonprofit, we have to pick our spots.
Mm-hmm. So how do we find the Story Exchange? How do we get to you?
Yeah, we're on the web at thestoryexchange.org.
Mm-hmm.
You can find our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and PRX. We are on Facebook mm-hmm. as The Story Exchange, also Instagram and Twitter.
Mm-hmm. So you really see this organization going well into the future because you really do have your work cut out for you, don't you?
There's no shortage of interesting stories out there, and there is no lack of need for mm-hmm. those stories. I think it comes back to the issue of role models and of can you be what you can't see? And
ooh, wow.
So we want to continue to put a spotlight on women's successes and challenges and be part of a support system. We are also looking at things we can do in like partnerships and things that we can do in education with girls, entrepreneurship education.
Encouraging them to perhaps. Yeah, that's a very good point to start at a young age and get them in there in science, engineering, business, whatever. It's got to start. If it isn't starting at home, let's get it in the schools or whatever. You would think at this point in, our lifetimes, we wouldn't have to be talking about this so much, but you are doing such good work.
Well, and one of the things that we saw is things are changing. They're changing when what young women have to say and what older women have to say are different. And that's because of, a half century of significant change in the status of women. So, it's I think that will be interesting also to continue to watch and also see with younger women, how do we encourage them?
And that's a great way to end. Thanks so much, Reva, for joining us today. Much success with the Story Exchange.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for your interest.
It's good works. Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. And if you have a story idea, contact us at thesandyklineshow.com.